Wolf Radio calling. Ghost Wolf calling. This is Ghost Wolf Radio calling. And Ghost Wolf Radio is the offspring of the Insurgency Radio Network, the brainchild of the infamous and notorious Tom Metzger. Tom Metzger can be reached by email at tm_Metzger@yahoo.com. You can also reach him by mail at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. You can listen to a new message on the Aryan Update line. He puts a new message out sometimes every other day, sometimes every 3 to 4 days. And that number is 574-267-5036. And white people, white insurgents, white gorillas, white werewolves, see yourselves in your role as to remake the white race. We are a small ingredient, people who think like us. I don't really want to include defense sitters on that, but people who think like us, we are a small ingredient that changes everything. We change the composition of everything. If you took a glass of milk, just a, you know, regular sized glass of milk, and you took a half a teaspoon, not a tablespoon, half a teaspoon of mustard, and you stirred it in that milk, not a full teaspoon, a half a teaspoon, and just stirred your milk for 45 minutes and took a sip of that milk, it would be very objectionable probably, because you would taste that mustard. And that's what we are. We are a small ingredient that changes things. Our enemies did the very same thing to us in the 50s. You know, I'm noticing that everything that white people take pride in is really under attack by Hollywood. Brokeback Mountain, you know, white people just have a respect for the white cowboy. Now all of a sudden, you know, they want to put homosexuality in with the white cowboy. And I noticed that there's a movie at the theater now called Revolutionary Road. And that's the 1950s that are under attack in that movie. You know, and when you think of the 1950s, what do you think about? If you live in the United States, you think about an all-white America, practically. America that was like, what, 95% white? 94? Man, I'd give anything to have those numbers back. But, you know, I mean, I haven't seen this movie, and I won't go see it, but I just hearing the commentary about the movie, how it was a very enslaving time, and, you know, they talked about the conformity of the time or this or that. You know, listen, my parents were, husband and wife and trying to raise a family in the 1950s. By time that, my oldest brother was born in 52, so they were... You know, my dad was working a couple of jobs. My mom was working. Not right away, though. She didn't really start working until the 60s. But, you know, she was a homemaker. And they didn't talk about the 1950s as if it was an enslaving time. They had fond memories of the 50s. You know, my dad fought the Japs in World War II in the Philippines. Got two Purple Hearts. Was wounded in action by the Japs. From mortar attacks, you know, never wanted to talk about the war. And then they were the quintessential World War II couple, and they did not look upon the 50s as a bad time. It was a great time for them. They owned their first home, and things were going for them. So everything that we take pride in or that we look back with nostalgia is under attack, and they're going after the youth. Saw a commercial the other day where some white bitch says, I want to volunteer because it's 2009, not 1959. Like, that was a bad thing. Listen, bitch, you can walk down any fucking street in Chicago practically 1959 and with complete safety. Try that now. You nigger-loving scum. Go to 47th and Cottage Grove or 63rd and Cottage Grove, or 63rd and Prairie in the south side of Chicago, wear a t-shirt that says, I love black people. And wear that t-shirt walking around Friday night. And see if that t-shirt will fucking help you. See if that t-shirt will keep you from being raped. You sorry white scum. So we need to remake our race. And we don't need to win over the whole race. For the time being, we need to see ourselves as spoiling. An ingredient that spoils and an ingredient that corrodes. We're not trying to revamp anything or redo anything. And I hope none of you out there had a, we just need to tweak the Constitution a little bit and then everything will be fine. No, it all needs to come down. The people who wrote the Constitution were rich white men. They gave a damn about the white peasantry. It was very elitist. Read cracks in the Constitution. So, how do you see yourselves as being that ingredient? You need to exercise your will to power. And maybe a lot of us out there need to remake ourselves in order for us to do that. I've said it before that the laws of the land are written by your racial enemies. The whole parameter of the world in which you live, how things are used, your freedom of speech. There's no freedom of speech. We have freedom of speech, but not the freedom to be heard. Exercise your will to power to be that ingredient that corrodes. We need to corrode this system. We need to be the white blood cells in the body. I was flipping through the channel the other day. I saw stopped on The View temporarily. I can only handle maybe a couple of minutes of that show. They got some Jew bitch on there, Joy Bay or whatever the fuck her name is. They say she grew up Catholic. That's bullshit. She is a fucking red Jew. But they were saying that, on The View that, they were talking about Eric Holder's statement, how we're a nation of cowards and this and that. And someone on there said, I don't remember which one, said that the youth are the future against racism. And you look at the prominence of the Ku Klux Klan 50 years ago and then look at it, see how it's diminished now. I'm hoping it's diminished because a good deal of it went underground and decided to deciding to be covert, And I truly hope that the Order and Timothy McVeigh and a couple other people will maybe just set the standard for what I hope to see in the future. If the youth are the future against racism, the youth are the future for us to continue on. I noticed Obama went to Canada the other day. He went to Canada first as his first international visit. I'd like to be a fly on a wall in that meeting. I'm sure he'll be meeting with the president of Mexico before long to bring about the North American Union. That's no right-wing dribble there. That's actually something that's in the planning stages. So we got to teach our youth. Got to keep our spirit alive with our youngsters. Some of you radio listeners out there have, young people that you have influence over. And I've said before, I'd really like Tom Metzger to do a show about, because he has experience on how to raise kids, for them to get the proper mindset growing up, but he didn't beat them over the head with racism. Maybe he should do part of a show based on that, how to go about doing that, You expose them to the information, you go out, you look at the world, you see the world as the way it is. And he said that to his kids, and I guess before long his kids came to him and said, Dad, you know what? You were right about that. I don't see, I've purchased numerous videotapes from war in the past 5 years or so, and I've seen a lot of stuff with John Metzger on talk shows and this thing. He don't look like somebody who's some brainwashed zombie, a racist zombie. He don't seem like that at all. He seems like he knows what he's talking about. He believes what he says, and you know, I think maybe that knowledge needs to get out there. How to raise our kids to be racialist. I was in the Social Security office the other day. Man, you talk about black and brown bureaucracy. I was in a Social Security office that's in Crook County, that Chicago and the surrounding suburbs are in. And I was the only white person there. And I've been in Social Security offices out in the suburbs. And man, you know, they really cycle you through there. They get you in and out of there pretty good. I was sitting in there for at least an hour and a half waiting to get, you know, just a replacement on my card. You know, but it was wall-to-wall spics in there. Had a black guard with a, looked like he had a 38 holstered in his, holstered as a sidearm there. And the black lady that, was you know, taking care of replacement cards or whatever. Boy, she moved like molasses on a snow-covered hill in January. You know, so it gave me time, you know, to look around the office. You know, and don't worry. I just do this by habit. I'm not planning anything, but I just, you know, look around the office where the surveillance cameras are. Okay, they're up on the ceiling so they can get the whole room. Okay, and I'm starting thinking if somebody was to come in that office with nondescript clothing, uncharacteristic of them, wearing a wide-brimmed hat and never looking up, they'd be hard-pressed to find out what this person looked like. But I'm sure they'll find a remedy to that. They'll get cameras on a lower level, covert cameras where you won't be able to see them. That's when you have to do stuff to your face, you know. But anyways, you know, I'm waiting to be served, and I look out in the hallway, and there's no cameras in the hallway. On the bottom floor, they had cameras. You know. And I noticed where the stairwell was, because if I need to get out of there in a hurry, I'm not going to rely on the elevator. You know, who knows if they don't have a switch that shuts down the elevator, keeps you trapped in there. You never know. But, you know, the stairwell, they had a stairwell exit there, and I guess it's hooked up to a fire alarm. Fire alarm will sound if you know, go off that stairs. But so I left the building, started, you know, walking around the parking lot, acting like I forgot where I parked my car. But I didn't park my car anywhere. I walked over there from where I live. Probably some of you who monitor these shows probably know what Social Security office I'm talking about. You know, I just acted like, man, where the fuck I parked my car? You know, search around, my hands on my hips, but I'm only doing that in case if I'm washed, they're looking at my body language, oh, this guy, you know, misplaced his car, but I'm really looking at where the outside surveillance cameras are located, if there are any. But anyways, when I was in this Social Security office, I noticed that they had different things translated into numerous languages. I saw the information translated into Vietnamese. And I'm noticing the Vietnamese language is in a Latin alphabet. So is the Hmong language. Why? Because the white man, probably some social Marxist Christian missionaries, went to their lands and want to infect them with Christianity and basically wrote their language down for them. Grammatical rules and everything. I looked at the Cambodian language, and that looked like its own language. But there were some caricatures in that language that looked very similar to our letters. I wonder if we had an influence on that. The Armenian had their own language, but they looked like there were some Latin characters in that too. So, if the Jew gets their way, in 250 years, there'll only be a handful of written languages on this planet. Japanese, Korean, Chinese, Arabic, Farsi, maybe Armenian, Cambodian, maybe the written language of Thailand may still be around, and of course Hebrew, but Russian, German, English, maybe a bastardized version of Spanish may be around, but we're fighting a lot we're fighting for just more than just, you know, white-skinned people being on this planet in the next millennium. We're fighting for everything. Culture, language, all that stuff's going to disappear if we don't watch it. I saw this documentary on TV the other day about the Latin Kings and how they got started in Chicago, and Latin Kings across the nation look at Chicago as like the motherland. And, you know, I noticed that they have Latin Kings in Washington State, probably in the SeaTac area, Seattle, Tacoma area. There's a lot of shit-skinned Mexicans there. And I'm thinking, I mean, come on, Northwest brothers. You're going to allow this shit from Chicago to get rooted in your community? You're going to allow something that started in Chicago to come and infect you? You know, these episodes of Gangland, I hope that there are white people out there to see this shit and say, you know what? These black and browns, they just need to be gotten rid of by any means necessary. And I'm sure there's white people out there that look at these episodes and, you know, and then they go away from these episodes with a newfound fear of black and brown. But I'm telling you, I know. I've been around Hispanic or mestizo males and black males all my life. And they look at these episodes that feature their gang on there, and it gives them credence. It gives them, you know, balls to do more things because they are getting the praise that they wanted. When you got some cop on there talking about, oh, they're dangerous, they'll just kill you just to look at you, man, they live for that. So these shows are actually promoting more gangbanging. I'm like, what's... They got to know that it does that, but they still persist on it. I mean, you know, just to get ratings, just to compete with A&E's, the first 48, they got to have... The History Channel's got to have shows like that. Incidentally, there was a... They were talking with a fucking shit-skinned spick on there who's I guess, an ex-Latin King, but I guess he still has loyalty towards the gang. He said that the only way to stop the Latin King is to line him up against the wall and shoot him in the head. That's a great fucking idea. Because that's exactly what needs to be done. You're trying to convert them to be model citizens by building rec centers in their community, by having after-school programs. A young white kid, what does he want? He's happy when he makes the wrestling team. He's happy when he gets an A in algebra. Or he's happy when you know, he gets selected to the college that he wants to go to. What does black and brown young males, what's their end game in life? Is to be feared in their neighborhoods. Big difference. That's why we can't share society with them. Saw a story the other day about some monkey who mauled some lady, and this monkey was a pet of another lady. And it just brings to mind how what I've been talking about before, how white people have just strayed way too far from the natural world. I'm telling you right now, if I'm walking through the woods and I run across a wolf or a mountain lion, and I'm looking at his body language, and it looks like it really doesn't want to be messed with, or it really doesn't want to mess with me, or maybe there's you know, he's a little bit unsure about me, or afraid of me, because maybe they past experience has taught them to be afraid of humans. I'm not going to reach out and try to feed that wolf or that mountain lion by hand. Some animals belong to the wild. In order for me to survive, I need to be wild. But these stupid-ass white people who take monkeys, you know, a lot of people don't know, monkeys will tear you apart. The average monkey, average chimpanzee has, less than 4% body fat. They are in a constant state of gymnastics. They are incredibly strong. I mean, I've heard about monkeys biting an entire buttock off a man in New Jersey, I think it was. They can rip your arm out of your socket with no problem. Monkeys are wild. Why would you want to befriend them and put a suit on them for an advertisement for something? You know, white people are making pets out of bears and tigers and lions, and look what happened to the Siegfried brothers, you know? They want to make pets out of snakes and alligators. I was looking for a place to live a number of years ago, and this guy said, hey, you can come live with me. I said, well, you know, I got to tell you, I got an alligator in my bathtub. I'm like, what? Like, yeah, it's no problem. You can take a shower. You got to put the alligator on a defensive first before you get in there. I'm like, oh, yeah. Right now, I was flabbergasted. I didn't know what to say. Finally, I get to this guy's apartment. I'm like, let me see this alligator. You know, and he opened up the bathroom door, and he said, hey, Cujo, or hey, whatever, and the alligator stuck its face out from behind the fucking shower curtain. He had a head about the size of a about the size of a football, an American football. I'm like, there's no fucking way, dude, I'm taking a shower in there. It's not out of fear. It's like, that's a wild animal. I'm not going to try and make friends with that. I think I have a healthy outlook on being close to the natural world. You know, via the natural world, if you look anywhere in the natural world, whether it's mammals, amphibious life, insect life, reptilian life, all of them have prey and predators. There are mammals who eat nothing but plants. There are mammals who eat meat. There are insects who feed on plants. There are insects who feed on other insects. There are fish who feed on whatever, and then there are, you know, sharks and piranhas that feed on other fish. That's the natural world. And for us to think that we can be friends with black and brown, it's suicidal. They are natural predators, and we need to be predators also. And we need to take our rightful place in the world. We are the world's premier problem solvers and movers and shakers. And no matter how much the black and brown dislike us, we created the world for them. Everything about the world that they partake in was brought about by the white man. They have electricity in their homes. They drive cars. They've flown in planes. They talk on cell phones and beepers and text messages, and they do internet stuff. All of that came from the white man. And maybe deep down inside, maybe that's why they hate us. Rightfully so. Let them hate us. I don't want them to like us. Okay? All right, scanning around here. Let's talk about some things here. Okay, I told you about what I did in the parking lot of the Social Security office. I make sure my body language is saying one thing, but I'm really looking for something else. So you need to start practicing that. I talked on the last show about this railroad trestle that I used to cross a busy street, because if I were to cross it, you know, just by waiting for traffic, I could have been spotted by agents of SOG. I could have been spotted by a nosy citizen who hears something in the news later and says, hey, I saw somebody fitting that description, you know, over here, and I got a better look at them because, you know, I drove right by them. When you cross a railroad trestle over a road, you have to keep a low profile, low as possible. Now, even though it was nighttime, and even though I was wearing dark colors, you can still silhouette yourself if you walk across it. So you never want to walk across anything. You have to, you know, get on all fours and crawl like a bear if you have to. Okay? I wanted to clarify something I'm fighting the other day I was talking about. If you're one of these guys that's, you know, had years of Taekwondo, maybe only a couple of years of Taekwondo, you want to do some back spinning heel kick in a fight or a spinning back fist, you know, irregardless of the fact that it's worked in the UFC, when you fight on the street, there are no rules, okay? There's no referee that's going to, you know, break up the fight if you tap out or if you go unconscious or you bleed too profusely. So no spin moves in a fight. Don't do a spinning back fist. Don't do a rear stepping mule kick or some stuff like that. You know, the only time you would ever use that is if you had your back to an enemy, and out of the corner of your eye you saw someone rushing you. But then again, I would try to, you know, make a move to the left or right and let him miss you and then face the guy head on. But no spin moves in a fight. Okay. In Detroit, there was a guy who did a home invasion. And what it was, he forced the white man, actually there was this white guy married to a black girl, so I really don't have too much to say in his defense. But anyways, He was outside warming up his car, getting ready to go to work. And, of course, he had a couple of nice cars in his driveway and the niggers in his neighborhood. You know, that's just an invitation for, you know, for you to be brutalized. They don't care if you're married to a black woman. They probably think, oh, he's married to a black woman. I can get closer without him being suspicious. So I guess he got what he deserved. But anyways, the gunman put a gun to his head, forced him back inside the house so he can get the keys to the car or whatever. You know, if you're ever in a situation like that, it's best for you to die outside the house than for you to be, you know, suckered into having a gun to your head and walk back inside the house thinking that if you beg, wheedle, and plead, the guy will show mercy. Black people and brown people do not show mercy. You start begging for your life to them, that is like an aphrodisiac to them. They feel so much power from that. And white people, we have a propensity to be merciful in a situation like that. So if you're in a situation where someone puts a gun to your head, all right, let's go back inside. Go back inside where your wife and kids are. It's best for you to take a bullet to the head right then and there, and for the neighbors to hear the shot, then for them to get inside your house, possibly rape your wife, brutalize your kids, and then kill all of you in the end. So if you're in a situation like that, you either fight for your life or take the bullet right then and there. Don't fucking endanger your family by thinking, all right, let's get back inside and I can calm these guys down. Bullshit. On that Gangland episode I saw about the Latin Kings, you know that the FBI built RICO charges against them because, you know, saw them as organized crime and this and that. And sure enough, the chief of security for the Latin King was the guy who was wearing a wire. He was the guy that was the snitch. He was the guy frisking people for a wire before they went in on a meeting. But yeah, he was wearing a wire. And in one case, he was wearing a covert camera. You know, yeah, I guess they had like a button camera or something like that. You know, he had a button on a shirt that was a camera. So, beware of stuff like that. You know, I was thinking the other day, thinking about you regular listeners, are you going to wait until racial destruction knocks on your front door? Are you going to wait until a family member is murdered before you do something? Are you going to wait for black and brown to do some home invasion or maybe to assault some friend of yours? There is a thing in fighting, and I came across this concept by, I bought this tape from Power and Press a number of years ago called Self-Offense. And it was by Jim Grover. Jim Grover is an acronym for Kelly McCann. He has a number of tapes on Paladin. And he makes them a little bit expensive because he doesn't want thugs buying, you know, his tapes. But honestly, he doesn't realize how rich these, you know, drug-selling thugs are. But anyways, you know, there's a concept of self-offense, you know? Not self-defense, self-offense. You're walking along the street, someone steps in front of you, going, yo, man, where the fuck you going? You think you going, white boy? They haven't put a hand on you, but they've obstructed your path. Are you going to wait till you get punched in the face? In that tape, he had 10 rules, and I don't remember them, and I wish I could get a hold of that tape just so I can go over those 10 rules and give them back to you guys. But one of the rules was, don't wait for physical harm to come your way to validate that you're in a life and death struggle. If somebody obstructs your path, or somebody looks like they're about, or you know, that's why you got to study body language. If somebody looks like they're about to do something, you strike first. Self-offense. Don't wait for you to take a punch across the chops for you to get ready, for you to get in your fighting stance and do something. If somebody obstructs your path and stands in front of you, you know, it's time to, once that happens, you need to strike first. And, you know, in order for us to get to that mindset, we need to undo a lot of things that we've been taught as little boys and girls, you know. But, you know, that's the same thing, you know, I mean, that's the same thing with the struggle. Are we going to wait until one of our family members is brutalized before we act? By then, it may be too late. Self-offense. Okay. I was looking at something the other day, came across some gang graffiti, and I X'd out the gang graffiti of this specific gang, and I spray painted its rival gang next to it. And, yeah, I've done that a number of times. But on one, I saw the leader's tag. You know, it's some guy who went by the name of Frosty. Some fucking spick who thinks he's so cold-hearted that they call him Frosty. Well, I X'd out his name, and I put R.I.P. next to it. And I put a fake tag name next to it. And I spray painted King Inca, which is a typical Latin King moniker for somebody who's a big shot in the Latin Kings. And I guess this guy named Frosty, he was a member of the SDs, the Satan's Disciples. So hopefully that's going to get some things going in that neighborhood. So you got to read gang graffiti and buy books that help you to fucking. There's a number of books out there that where you can read gang graffiti and know what it's about. It's a good thing to learn because you can use it against them. Okay. As you guys know, I'm writing this book called Freedom in the Realm of Madness, and the Earl Turner type of guy in this book, Eric Blackburn, wants to build a cell one person at a time. I tell you this story like this because I don't want to waste time on these shows reading whole segments of what I'm writing. But basically, and I do this because I want to run this stuff across you guys and see what you think about it, you know, see if it's action-packed enough for you guys, and maybe I can use the proceeds to help resist.com get, you know, better resources. But Eric's building a cell. What's he building a cell for? For insurgent activity. But he wants to be able to trust these guys. And these guys he's known a long time. So he takes one member out. He says, hey, guys, Joe or whatever, we're going to go out Friday night. We're gonna drink some beers. Hey, you want anyone else to come on? I said, no, just me and you, man. I got some things to talk to you about. We might as well talk about it over a pitcher of beer. So they meet up. And then Eric had it all set up where he was going to dispatch someone with extreme prejudice right in front of this one person. He says, what I've done, you need to do also. If you don't, you know, you say you believe in the same things I believe in, we've done nothing but talk, I have to be able to trust you. I have to watch you do this. If I have to hold another guy down while you dispatch him with extreme prejudice, and so be it. But you have to shed blood tonight. I've shed blood, you have to shed blood. That's how we're going to trust each other. Okay? I have dirt on me, you have dirt on you. If you narc on me, if you sell me out, you're still going to do 25 years. They may give you a reduced sentence, but you're still going to do 25 to 30. And you think about what quality of life you're going to have when you get out. You're going to be an old, spent man. Okay? So, our society's going to shit. The white working class the system has done everything to dispossess them. We are not going to sit on our ass and let this happen. We're not going to talk shit anymore. We're going to build our cell one man at a time. And each man who joins a cell, after me and you do this deed, we'll take someone out tomorrow night, one guy, and we'll watch him do the same thing. And we'll build ourselves a cell up to five or six men, no more. We don't need more than that, not now anyways. That's how Eric Blackburn is building a cell. He also wants to incapacitate some urban schools. He destroyed a school in an urban center, in an urban area. Because that school was destroyed, those little black and brown kids had to go to another school to get their education, which was more of a logistics nightmare because they had to be bused into another neighborhood, which brought them in contact with rival gangbangers, which caused overcrowding in the school. Overcrowded schools, kids don't learn that well. Chaos ensues. It's hard for anyone to learn in an environment like that. And that's good for the race. Why should these black and browns get great educations? Educations not based on their racial heritage. I saw this thing on Booker T. Washington the other day. Yeah, I mean, you know, he did some good things, you know, with the peanut and all that. Or no, that not Booker T. Washington. It was George Washington Carver. He did some good things with the peanut and this and that. But, you know, they talked about his life from the time he was a kid to he was an old man. And the people who were the influential ones who basically opened doors for him to get where he was at were white people. It was a white, I believe it was a white woman or a white man in the school who basically steered him towards horticulture, you know, study of plants and stuff. You know, wherever he made a big significant difference, you can always point out that there was a white man or a woman who was the catalyst for that. In an all-black society, George Washington Carver would have been nothing more than a freaking shaman or something. So, Eric Blackburn destroys an urban school, causes those little kiddies to be bussed over to another neighborhood, rival gangs, there's shootings, stabbings, schools are overcrowded, little black kiddies and little brown kiddies can't learn. It's just a great thing that he did. What did I write here? So Albert Cronenberg adds to the disruption of academic cohesion and dumbed down the elements of the brown and black kiddies. That's great. It's awesome. Way to go, Eric. All right, when in an urban area, something different. When you are walking in an urban area, and you come upon a group of black and brown, you found yourself in this area, you know, you found yourself, maybe you were out with some friends and they ditched you in a fucking black neighborhood. You need to get their ass for that. But you're in a black area or a brown area. And you're coming upon a group of guys standing on the corner and, you know, you've surveyed the surrounding terrain. You can't get around them. Well, walk upon them. Act like you're wounded somehow. Don't act like you're drunk. Well, you could, I guess, but act like you're wounded. Act like you're holding your side like you got stabbed or shot. And when they gather around you, or when they come close to you, that's when you bust out with the weapon system, whatever you... You know, that would be a good element of surprise, to act like you're wounded, and then do what you gotta do. It'd also be a good strategy in a fight. You're fighting a guy, you know, you did a little exchange, and you act like your right hand is busted. He knows that you're right-handed. And you act like you stepped off a few steps and you're like holding your hand and shaking it, like, you know, you're acting like it's really hurt. He's gonna bum rush at that point, but your hand's really not hurt. That's when you know, get him in a clinch and start using all your weapon systems, your elbows, knees, headbutts, fists, gouging your eye, biting, all that stuff. So acting wounded could be a great element of surprise. Remember I told you guys a few shows ago about those I seek to destroy, I flatter? I listened to that show the other day, and I really didn't say what the moral of the story was. The moral of the story is ego. Ego will destroy us. Too many guys trying to be the next Fuhrer, okay? And they don't want to listen to good advice. You know, I would love for NSM88.com to, you know, have nothing on their website but leaderless resistance. You know, stories about that. Yeah, I would not care at all if they took these Ghost Wolf shows and, you know, put it on their website. I wouldn't mind. You know, stop doing the rallies and demonstrations. Stop doing literature distribution. Stop trying to recruit. And basically, Commander Shep, you know, or Scoop, whatever you like to be called, tell the rest of your portal units, hey, you guys are on your own. You're autonomous. Do whatever you want. NSM88 from now on is going to just be propaganda. That's it. We're just going to put out propaganda. We're going to put out good advice. And we're not going to march anywhere. So do that. You're not going to win the masses. Look how many thousands and thousands of people love this monkey who's now the President of the United States. Okay, so ego is a weakness. Don't let it be your weakness. And you can manipulate other things in people to get them to do what you want. Pride, like I did to that guy I used to work with. Greed. You can get someone to do something because in the end they see that maybe they're going to get a good payday out of it. Or fear. if you don't do something about this, this is going to happen. You know, true believers really have no weakness. So, if you're not a true believer, then you need to reevaluate that. You may have some weaknesses. You know, I noticed on TV that when someone kills somebody, there's all this inner turmoil when, you know, right before or after they killed someone. It's in every Hollywood movie, just about. Not completely, but just about. Just about every Hollywood freaking movie has this thing where they want to show people in just great inner turmoil because they killed someone. That's bullshit. Okay? You know, I mean, I've killed people in the line of duty. You know, Gulf War One. And I'll admit, I had a funny feeling the first time I let go of my 25mm chain gun mounted on an M2 Bradley, destroyed another Iraqi vehicle. I admit it, you know, I felt kind of funny. You always feel kind of, I mean, there was no voice that boomed out of heaven, "You are now condemned to hell." You know, we do this to ourselves. And like that, I love that line in The Last Samurai when the Japanese actor said to Tom Cruise, you know, soldiers who have nightmares only do so because they feel guilty for what they've done. The samurai never felt guilty for anything. You know, like I said before, there's a number of things I respect the Asian mind about, and that's one of them. Their attitude on suicide and their attitude on killing the enemy. They had no remorse for them. And because maybe we're biologically, we just have too much mercy on our enemies. And I'm telling you, that is leading to our downfall. So, don't do it. Remake yourself. Look at the state of the race that we're in now. The state of the race is horrible. Ludacris, the black rapper, said the other day, said that if it wasn't for white people, he wouldn't be selling 2 to 3 million CDs every year. Well, that nigger's right. He's right on. Rap sales for rap CDs, anywhere from 65 to 70% are white suburbanites. That's how they're getting the youth. All right, I picked up a couple things on burn notice the other night. Let me read my own notes here. It says, one way to ensure someone is who they say they are, if you talk to them on the phone, then you have to meet them in person, change some of the details, and see if he bites. Okay? He met some guy, or he talked to some guy on the phone, and he wanted to make sure that he's talking to the guy he talked to on the phone. He said, well, you know, we talked on the phone that, you know, we were going to do this thing for $15,000. And the guy went along with it. When they talked on the phone, the price was $8,000. And he changed one of the names, too. So that's something that you can use. Now, well, by the way, you know, this show, Burn Notice, I know it's kind of cheesy with the Miami thing and this and that, but the narrated parts from the show's main character are very interesting. About 90%, I don't agree with all of them, but about 90% of them I've heard so far I agree with. So that's a good tactic you can use. Okay. There's another one. The friend of Michael Weston, that's the main character, gets fed to watch some Haitian drug lord, and then approaches Haitian and tells him feds are watching him, and then that he was there to help the market. What he did was, in order to gain this guy's trust, the guy who he meant to destroy to get him out of the country, he would go up to this Haitian criminal, this war criminal who's wanted back in Haiti, says, "Hey, I'm here to help." I said, your interests coincide with my interest. If you look over my shoulder, there's a group car full of feds watching you right now. Well, because he helped him out, he was a little bit more prone to drop his guard for them. But then again, somebody could be suspicious of that. So, think about that. There's another interesting thing he said. And he said, most people who would burn down a village are also the same type of people who won't throw away an old tie, an old necktie, because it reminds them of high school. You know, and he later on said that what your goal is to hang them with that necktie. So what is it that someone has that they just won't let go of and they're a racial enemy of yours that you can exploit. You know, it could be going back to pride, greed, and fear, maybe a chemical dependency, maybe a gambling problem, or maybe it'd be something that they physically own. Think about that. All right, 911 centers, and this is going on in Chicago. 911 centers will have access to surveillance cameras near the scene of any crime. You call 911, you say there's a shooting at, you know, 63rd and Western. You know, 911 will punch up, you know, a bank camera that's in the vicinity there, or maybe get all them cameras online to look for the guy who the call is going to give a description of. You know, when we come under Chinese occupation, I'm sure they're going to use this Chinese occupation. And don't tell me there's not a Santa Claus. You know, it may be more beneficial to shoot from the shadows at these Chinese occupation forces so no one gets a really good description of what you look like. I heard a story the other day. I don't know if it took place in New Jersey, New York, but maybe somewhere on the East Coast. There's a guy going around the neighborhood killing neighborhood dogs that were left out in the yard at night. And what this did is caused people in the neighborhood to fear leaving their dogs out. And they were sure to bring their dogs in at night. And the reason why he did that, because he had an activity, nighttime activity planned in that neighborhood. I think it was some kind of heist somehow. And he didn't want neighborhood dogs giving them away because, you know, dogs hear things that people can't. And dogs would announce his presence during his nighttime ops. So he went around killing neighborhood dogs to, you know, say, oh, no, we got a serial killer of dogs on the loose here. So, you know, he did that over a couple of weeks. And so, you know, put the whole neighborhood into a tizzy, and they brought in their dogs at night. They didn't let them, they didn't let them out during the day. They walked them, did what they did, and they brought, made sure that the dogs stayed inside all day and all night. So, interesting. I also noticed that most people bring their dogs in when it's raining. Most people don't leave their dogs out when it's raining, not unless they have some kind of overhang on their back porch or something like that. But, like I said before, you may want to time, you may want to have your actions coincide with, you know, some inclement weather. Okay? Also, do not save receipts for items you buy for ghost wolf activities. Okay? Do not save your receipts. There's a guy who bombed, who fucking bombed his ex-wife and her boyfriend or whatever, and when he became a person of interest, they searched his home and found receipts for specific wire and rocket accelerator powder or whatever. They found the Walmart receipts to this shit, and they looked up the SKU number, and they were able to tell exactly what item it was that they bought, how, what quantity and everything. So don't ever save a receipt for an item you buy for any of your activities. You buy your thing, you test it out a little bit, and if on the night of the op it fails you, don't go back and bitch. And, you know, and you've destroyed your receipt long before that, so, you know, you just have to bite the bullet on that one. Stuff like that, you don't want to bring attention to yourself by bitching at the store, but you don't want to save receipts, so don't ever save receipts, okay? What time is it, men? It's time to get militant! I did this the other day, and Tom Metzger thought I was drunk when I did it, but I think I'll do it again, even if you don't like it. Platoon, attach, cut! Right, freeze! Forward, punch! You're up, right! Hey, Captain Jack! Meet me on the railroad track with your M16 in hand. I want to be a killing man. Hey, Captain Jack. Meet me on the railroad track with your dynamite in hand. I want to be a demo man, a killing man. Hey, Captain Jack.
Meet me down by the railroad track. Now, with your bayonet in hand, I want to be a slashing man, a demo man, a killing man. Hey, hey, Captain Jack, meet me down by the railroad track. With your gasoline in hand, I want to be an arson man, a slashing man, a demo man, a killing man. Hey, hey, Captain Jack, when you meet me down by the railroad track, do not ask me for my name, anonymity my claim to fame. Hey, hey, Captain Jack, when you meet me down by the railroad track, if I've sent you talk to the feds, make no mistake, you will be dead. Cause I'm an arson man, I'm a slashing man, I'm a demo man, I'm a killing man. Hey, hey, Captain Jack, it's time to take this country back. Do not try to rat me out. Political violence is what I'm about. Your left, your left, your left, right. Go to your left, go, hey, go to your left, your left, your left, right. Tiny bubbles in my beer makes me wonder what the hell I'm doing here. Your left, right. Your left, right, left, repeat after me. Your left, right. Your military left. Well, I don't know, but I heard rumors. Jesse Jackass likes to wear ladies' bloomers. Well, I don't know, but I've been told white insurgents are good as gold. Well, look to the left, and what do you see? Potential allies with the working class creed. Well, death to the right wing and all the cowardly ways. They are a roadblock to our overthrowing days. With ruthless abandon, let's deal with these punks after they are bound and gagged. We'll stuff them in trunks with chains and cinder blocks. We'll throw them in the lake. That's the price for these right-wing fakes. Well, tiny bubbles in my beer. The right wing is dead. Time for guerrilla warfare. Your left, your left, your left, right. Now go to your left, two, three. Go to your left, your left, your left, right. Platoon, look, I'm hard. Platoon, halt, one, two. In cadence left, please, one, two. Stand back, please. Insurgents, we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. We must starve the sheep and feed the wolf. We must carpe noctem. And in closing, let me read the following words to you men and ladies. We shatter the night with a boom. We are a ghost wolf cell called Doom. We're disciples of Occidental mayhem. We live by the mantra, slay them. We only have one life to live. Ours is not the time to forgive. Let flames fill the night sky. Let's snipe from places on high. For whom do the bells toll? Smite those that try to control. Seize the initiative every single night. Be ruthless with all of your might. On revolution, we are hell-bent. We are much more than malcontents. We're enlightened barbarian men. Our existence we do defend. To show mercy is to fail. We must gut them and spill entrails. Rich whites lie dead at my feet. They were once the economic elite. As blood drips from my machete, our betrayal they died regretting. We're coming to punch!
Trouble with trouble, it's always at hand.
You never jump up around it. You never just walk on through it. We'll find the power, and together
chapter of our torment.
my lonely forward motion.